Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, and tonight Tony Gosling is with me, and boy, we're hot on the trail of the Bilderberg Group meeting that's going to be held in Chantilly, Virginia, starting on the 1st of June. Welcome to our program, Tony.
Oh, yeah, so it's just about starting. I know I've seen some of the pictures of Luke Radowski and Charlie Skelton already over there. You know, keeping a close eye on what's happening. But, I mean, it's always interesting to look as the basically the Wednesday of the meeting is where the Secret Services all come in and sweep the entire place for bugs from top to bottom. They just make sure there's no one hiding there, etc. So they have to have a full 24 hours pretty much to, clean the building of all those proles and anything the proles might have left, the great unwashed. Even though, of course, it's a massive five-star luxury hotel. And the first thing that's interesting, I always think, is to take a look at the agenda, George. Number one, top of the agenda, is what they describe as the Trump administration, a progress report. Now, of course, they never did this with Obama. They certainly haven't done it with George Bush Sr. in the past or any of the other U.S. leaders. And that this is completely new.
Yeah, it is. That's number one. So they're going to decide his fate at this meeting. Okay? No doubt about it.
Well, they may well do. They'll certainly be sounding out the various... of course, you must understand that the real Bilderbergers are not the people on that list. They are the steering committee is the real Bilderberg. These are the people that actually have been selected by the great Bilderbergers of the past. We're talking about the Henry Kissingers, the David Rockefeller, who died this year. And they are the people who are running this organization. They invite a whole peripheral bunch, two different types, I suppose. One are the, I shouldn't call them peripheral really, because you're talking about kings and queens to do the schmoozing. And then also, they are also trying to select people who may be powerful in the future. So they're introducing them to the world elite. For example, Emmanuel Macron 2 years ago was at the Bilderberg Conference. Now he's the president of France. Also, his prime minister was at the Bilderberg Conference. At the time, 2 years ago, they were completely obscure characters. No one had ever heard of them. And suddenly now they are running the country. So they really are the kingmakers, these people. We've seen the same with a whole bunch of people over the years. It might even, George, I think, maybe worth going through some of these people because, you know, you hear this term, the kingmakers, written about the Bilderbergs, but it's very rarely do we get the chance to actually run through some of the names. I can do that for you now if you want, which is
right,
Barack Obama was at the Bilderberg Conference of 2008, then became U.S. president. Gerhard Schroeder and Angela Merkel attended in 2005, where Schroeder became the new Schroeder was the chancellor, and then Merkel became the new chancellor. Jean-Claude Trichet, he went to Bilderberg in 2003, which just the year after he was then made the president of the European Central Bank. José Manuel Barroso, he went in 2003, then became the president of the European Commission. Jürgen Schrimp, he went in 1994, then he became the boss of Daimler Benz. Tony Blair, notorious Blair, in 1993 went to Bilderberg. Then he became the Labour leader and the British Prime Minister. Bill Clinton in 1991, then got the Democratic nomination, became US President. Helmut Kohl, if we go back a bit to the 1980s, went to Bilderberg, then became German Chancellor. Margaret Thatcher, if you remember her, George? She went to Bilderberg in 1977. And then suddenly became British Prime Minister. Well, actually, not suddenly, just 2 years later. And Helmut Schmidt went in 1973, then became the Federal Chancellor. Now, it's an incredible list. And you do wonder if there's any point in voting for these people when they seem to be able to pick these presidents so early.
Right. They have this McAuliffe, Terrence McAuliffe, governor of Virginia, on there this year. He's there. But that might be preparing him for a higher office in the future, just like some of the lists you just
exactly. These are the interesting characters to watch, George. The ones that you've never heard of before, and then you find, gosh, I'm sure I've come across that person. And then you realize, oh, that was 2 or 3 years ago. They were at the Bilderberg Conference. How about that? And then now they're running the country. Now they're running the world. So, yes, Trump definitely is causing a few problems for them. I think Bilderbergers would have loved to have Hillary Clinton because she kind of just did whatever they wanted. And you have to remember, you're dealing with here a kind of military-industrial complex, globalist elite. Some would call New World Order. I'm not quite sure where I entirely stand on that, but obviously they are. They have a rather close links with the Chinese. I think what's being what's happening here is that the Western Empire, that is the US and North America, along with Europe, is seen as kind of oppositional to China. Certainly it is in regards to human rights and things like that. Although, hang on a minute, because there'll be Chinese-style human rights going on down at Chantilly for a few days. But those... It seems to me what's being happened is that there's an attempt to put these into a massive conflict with the Russians kind of sandwiched in the middle. And it's interesting to see which way the Russians are going to go. It looks now now they may be going with more with the Chinese after what's happened with the Ukraine and with Syria and this sort of thing. But transatlantic relations, options and scenarios is another big item on the agenda, third down. And that is important, isn't it? Yeah. What's happening between the EU and the US?
The number of people that are on his staff, like this director of strategic initiatives, Christopher Little, is on there. And then you've got McMaster, national security advisor, is on there also. You just got too many people on there. Ross, okay, is on there, secretary of commerce.
Now, the question has to be, where is their loyalty? Is it to their president or is it to Henry Kissinger and the Eric Schmidt and the masters of the Bilderberg, the NATO power elite? You know, what
exactly?
That's the question to ask these people. The answer is usually their loyalty is not to the people you think it is. It's actually to the Bilderberg. They're interested in more money, career. They're interested in particularly in schmoozing the banksters so that they get loads of financial deals. And this is one of the reasons I think that they have to get together, you know, in places like this, is that these deals are done. This is where the handshakes take place at the bar, you know, this kind of thing. And this is why so many people want to go to these meetings. So there's also on the agenda is the direction of the EU. Can globalization be slowed down? I think actually Bilderberg don't want it to slow down. They want globalization. That's quite obvious. They're the high priests of globalization. So they put these items on the agenda, which are the opposite of the things they really want.
Right.
So they're trying to fool the journalists that are watching. And in fact, they'll see how the people that come along react, like the senator you were talking about. How do they react to this? Which side are they on? And if they start to... answering correctly, you know, then they're the sort of person that will get a pack on the back from Henry. They might even, if they're really lucky, be asked to sit next to him at dinner.
This war on information. Let's see what are we going here.
Well, look, hang on a minute, because this, of course,
job, income, and unrealized.
No, but the war on information is a biggie.
For global income.
The war on information is a biggie, George. It's a real biggie. It's the first time I've heard this term. It's really kind of.
Yes, it is. And Eric Schmidt is there.
It's a rehashed version of fake news. Yeah, the war on information. Now, of course, that really means it's the people like you and I, the bloggers, the people that are criticizing, telling the truth because the mainstream media is lying. It's the kind of thing that a psychopath would come out with when they are so obsessed with their own the rightness of what they're doing by causing mass murder. You know, serial war criminals like Henry Kissinger.
Populism, they're scared of populists. The populist movement is number eight.
Yeah, but this war on information is really important. I mean, certainly for us here in Britain, you know, we like to think we've got a little bit more of an independent press than the US, but I do wonder sometimes. Now, the most interesting invitee, we've got obviously one of the main characters is from the Financial Times, their chief foreign correspondent. Not quite sure what his name is, can't remember now. But we've also got from Ofcom, this is a really interesting new development. We've never seen the head of Ofcom or anything like it at Bilderberg before, certainly not from the UK. And this is because Ofcom is the broadcasting regulator in Britain. Now, the idea that a regulator of broadcasting is sitting down with a whole bunch of people who don't want documentaries about their crooked corporations and their crooked banks broadcast on the TV or on the radio is absolutely appalling. This is a woman called Sharon White. I would suggest to you, George, that she's way out of her depth with these people. She's the chief executive of the UK broadcasting regulator, Ofcom. Ofcom have already banned Iranian state broadcasting for totally spurious reasons. So what we're seeing here is a kind of new Goebbels attitude developing, where actually, funnily enough, I mean, it's one of those things I looked into a few years ago. The British never banned Lord Haw Haw all the way through the Second World War. If people wanted to, they could tune in and they could get the German propaganda and they could listen to it if they wanted to in English. But the idea was Churchill and the rest of them decided, well, look, if we try and ban this, then people will just see us as they'll want to watch it more. They'll want to listen to it more. They'll wonder why we're banning it. So they just let the German propaganda spill out into the British airwaves and people could tune in if they wanted to, because they knew that they had the confidence that their narrative, the BBC of the 1940s and the 1930s, was better, that it was freer, and that it was actually much better journalism than the sort of crazy stuff that the Germans got. What they've decided now is the opposite, George. They've decided if there is another narrative outside of the Western narrative, that is the mainstream media narrative, that we don't like, we're simply going to ban it. And so they are, what they're doing, yeah, effectively, right, is they're trying to block out any kind of criticism, not only by the Iranians, who are, I mean, this, I do a lot of regular work, trained by the BBC, now working for Iranian state broadcasting quite a lot of the time. They're making sure that nobody in Britain hardly sees that at all. So it's completely banned from the Freeview. So to have someone who's a broadcasting regulator there at Bilderberg being schmoozed by the likes of serial war criminal Henry Kissinger to make the sort of decisions that he wants to regulate the British broadcasting as he wants is deeply, deeply disturbing. To have a broadcasting regulator, a press regulator at Bilderberg, right, is totally unprecedented. And what it means is that we're just going to get more lies, the sort of lies that we've been getting from the BBC about weapons of mass destruction. You see, there's no talk about that being a bad idea. And what they're going to try and do is use things like the terrorist attack in Manchester to try and limit what we're allowed to say on the internet. Because, of course, the internet in social media is where most young people now get their information from, because the big broadcasters, the London media, the Washington media, are simply not trusted. Yeah. They're thought of as propaganda, and they are propaganda a lot of the time. They're just saying BBC effectively is just state broadcasting.
You know, this Ofcom, she'll be getting together with probably Eric Schmidt and getting his feedback from the way that they're controlling with the computers and everything else and doing their limiting of messages and so forth. So I'm sure it's all going to be a good synergy type of talk with them, with Ofcom. See what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, there's also the usual suspects are in there. You know, your Henry Kissinger's, your John Micklethwaite, the editor-in-chief of Bloomberg, he is now, but of course he's with The Economist. These are propaganda tools. And I was just hearing from the former special branch officer, Charles Shoebridge. I was chatting to him earlier on, and he explained to me that there is no press office for MI5 because all of the main home affairs correspondents of the BBC are their press officers. They just tell the public what MI5 want them to hear. So we're seeing effectively a kind of state bureaucracy taking over broadcasting so that independent journalists like you and I are just completely kicked out and all people get is propaganda. That's where we're heading.
Well, Peter Thiel is there along with his CARP fellow. The CARP is head of the Palantir Corporation, and Peter Thiel is listed as Thiel Capital, see. Now, but Thiel is in business with Joshua Kushner, and also a thing came out today. Fiona Hill, okay, that's on the Security Council, has been on the Soros payroll for years, and she's one of the top people on the Russian expert, okay? That just came out today, Fiona Hill.
I think one of the other interesting things about this, I mean, it's the Bilderberg meeting, is you mentioned, yeah, Alex Karp at Palantir Technologies. Well, something I've not come across before is this guy, J.D. Vance. I mean, I assume it's a man. He's the author.
Vance, you're saying?
Yeah, he's the author, okay, and the partner of Mithril Capital. Look, there's a bit of a theme here, isn't there? It's called The Lord of the Rings. Mithril in The Lord of the Rings is this kind of silvery stuff which helps you to protect you against swords from you know, Sauron and the forces of darkness, and it also helps you be invisible, this kind of thing. Now, this is all mythology from The Lord of the Rings. This is the mythos that these people are using in the names of their massive corporations, which are taking things over.
Yeah,
why is that? You know, Palantir. The Palantir is this kind of all-seeing eye style thing where you can communicate in The Lord of the Rings. But I would suggest to you that the guy who's in charge of Bilderberg, really, Henry Kissinger, at the top table, he's the man that's really been running things most of the years policy-wise. And it's him that is seen as the great guru who knows the which direction Western foreign policy should take. He seemed to be quite reasonable. But anyway, he seems to be a kind of Saruman character. In other words, you know, if you don't mind me stretching the Lord of the Rings analogy a bit, you've got the castle Orthanc, which is Saruman's castle in The Lord of the Rings, is rather like the Westfields Marriott Hotel in Chantilly, where all these people are being drawn in to this great wise man who actually, it turns out, is working for the dark side.
Oh, my gosh. Well, they're really into the occult, aren't they?
They are, I think. I mean, also, I mean, the good thing to know about The Lord of the Rings is it's actually written, I think, you know, Tolkien was very close to a guy called C.H. Charles in Oxford, who was a translator, and he translated some of the very first into English of some of the very first of the apocryphal and pseudepigraphal books, things like the Book of Enoch. The first time they were published in English was by C.H. Charles. And so I think what's going on here is that Tolkien was drawing on quite a lot of this slightly, you know, the sort of stuff that's not standard in the Bible, but it was used for centuries by the Jews and, you know, and subsequently by some Christians afterwards as a kind of tome where they would get their faith from. And so Tolkien, I think, when he was rolling out the whole Lord of the Rings analogy, he was very, very consciously including in there things like the white hand of Saruman as the white glove of the Freemasons, for example. You know, you could easily see it as that. The eye of Sauron, the eye in the top of the pyramid of the Illuminati. So I think there's a lot more to the imagery used in The Lord of the Rings than meets the eye. And this is why I think that the Bilderbergers are actually afraid of it. And so they have to steal it and try and use it as their own identity. You know, put on a great big gigantic tower block in Dallas or something. Palantir, you know, to steal the identity, to kidnap, to squat, you know, to take over the identity of what is actually, I think, a very good critique in The Lord of the Rings of the sort of battle, the spiritual battle, if you want, between the forces of good and the forces of evil.
Did we see any British intelligence on that list at all?
Oh, of course. Come on. John Saws is there. He's the former Director General of MI6. MI6, who have just been recruiting people to fight in Libya, and we've just found one of their little recruits, sons of one of their little recruits, has blown up 22 people in Manchester. So MI6 are a foreign intelligence service. Their interest is in changing policy abroad, projecting British foreign policy to regime change in Libya, Syria, places like this. But then when it all blows back and kills a whole bunch of people in Manchester, MI6 just throw up their hands and say, well, sorry, that's not our responsibility.
Oh, my gosh, I tell you. What about Manchester? What's your take on that so far?
Well, there's been a few interesting developments over the last week or so. One is the Sky News clip with a woman who's in the theatre in the arena, where she says that very convincing interview where she says she twice got the attention of the security because there was someone very suspicious sitting next to her, and that suspicious person was fiddling with a rucksack. They weren't interested in the concert. They kept being preoccupied looking round towards the place where the bomb eventually ended up going off, and so she was, I mean, we're all told if you see anything suspicious, tell a member of staff. We're told this on the underground. We're told this on signs and notices and over the tannoys in big venues like this. And of course, she did exactly that. And that person was completely ignored. In fact, she was even told by the security, private security at the Manchester Arena, go away and sit down, because how would you like to be told that you were suspicious? So she was doing her job, just as the mother of the bomber was doing her job by reporting her son to the authorities, just as the people in the mosques in over in Manchester were doing by reporting Salman Abedi to the anti-terrorist hotline several times, several years ago, saying this guy is talking about suicide bombing being okay, and we think you should keep a very close eye on him. So the FBI also contacted MI5 and said, you've got to keep a close eye on this guy. He's planning an attack in your country. So you do wonder how many times you have to tell MI5 this guy, specific guy, naming him, etc., is planning an attack before they actually lift the finger to try and stop him. You do have to wonder why they didn't do that, and that's why there's two inquiries been announced into internal inquiries in MI5, which, of course, will find absolutely nothing and question nobody, because somebody should has completely failed in their duty to stop this attack taking place, and they could easily have done. There were enough tip-offs. I mean, I think if you're getting five or six tip-offs that someone is planning an attack, don't you think MI5 should lift a finger to stop it?
So there's evidence possibly that they knew about this beforehand.
Well, it's definitely. There's no ifs and buts.
Like
maybe
that.
One or two right. warnings you might question, but when you've got five or more warnings specifically about a specific person, and MI5 still allow the attack to take place, I mean, this beggars belief, George. MI5 were definitely complicit in this attack. I don't think that's there's any I have any problem saying that, but and of course MI6 were largely to do with the whole jihadi thing, with this guy going over to Libya and possibly Syria too, his father working as an MI6 agent for years. MI6 very, very definitely involved, but it's not their job to protect people in Britain. It's MI5's job, and they completely failed. And if it was me, I'd be, number one, I'd be sacking the Director General. I'd also be sacking the head of whatever section it was that was supposed to be looking after domestic British people under jihadis. I would be sacking at least three or four people down that chain of command within MI5, and then I would be bringing in an independent inquiry, probably of some robust members of parliament or journalists, to go in and find out exactly what happened, with complete free access to MI5, open up the doors, because this has happened already with 7-7, the similar kind of thing, where they were following somebody around that ended up killing 55 people. This time, thank God, it was less. It was 22 people,
right.
But we shouldn't be allowing them to carry on operating, because they keep making the same mistakes again and again, and scores of British people are dying as a result.
This Henry de Castries, that's the chairman of the Bilderberg, they don't have his other post. He's a director now of HSBC.
That's right. Well, they often do that. It's a good idea to go through
these.
They left that off.
See.
Yeah, they always do this, George. Then this is aimed at credulous journalists, and if a journalist realizes, oh, actually, this person here isn't exactly who they're saying it is, then if a journalist realizes that, they might even be targeted and sacked. Say for example, you've got Jose Barroso. He's the chairman of Goldman Sachs, but it doesn't mention he's also the ex-president of the European Union. If you're a president of a European Union, it's not going on your CV. Hang on a minute. No, this is just to bamboozle the journalists.
Right. They do that all the time, don't they?
Yeah, they certainly do.
Huh?
They certainly do. Anyway, so looking at the other few things that are on the list there, I think the only other one I would really draw attention to is China, because you've got, obviously they'll be talking about North Korea and things like that, but China, they've got a senior Chinese guy in there. I think it's the ambassador to the US, Chinese ambassador. They don't normally have the Chinese, as occasionally they do.
Yeah.
But I think the similarity between the more totalitarian direction that the West is taking and China will be very clear around the Bilderberg venue this year. If you look at the sorts of human rights abuses that will be taking place, probably arbitrary arrests, sort of roughing up of journalists, intimidation of journalists, going into their hotel rooms,
that sort of thing.
That's the sort of thing you'd expect in China, not in the United States.
Did they ever put up a steering committee list? I didn't see one.
Yes, there certainly is. Yep, you go onto the Bilderberg Meetings website, their official website, or if you could, even better, you could go to my website, which is bilderberg.org, and you can find the forum there. If you just go to the top, it says guest book and forum. You'll find a whole list of the steering committee on there. And I just think it's interesting to see how that's changed over the years, with the move much more towards his high tech, the Palantir technologies, you know, Google DeepMind, these kinds of things, and obviously, you know, Eric Schmidt and his Alphabet Google thing. What they're doing is they're consolidating the entire future of the internet. That means the entire future of the media under one roof, with two or three people controlling it: Peter Thiel, the likes of Eric Schmidt, Mark Zuckerberg, the bosses of places like Twitter and LinkedIn and Amazon. They want them all on the same page. That is to say, look, you're just basically working to gather data for the NSA, and as long as you carry on doing that, then you can be your market leaders in the area. And there's this unbelievable relationship, really symbiotic relationship between these big tech giants, the banks who finance them, and the National Security Agency. Basically, we're all being put under surveillance. We're all being profiled. Massive amounts of information being gathered on every single citizen on planet Earth, particularly in the West. Anybody that might think of rebelling in the future, they want to know who they are before they even think of rebelling. Maybe they'll jail them before they get a chance to.
Did they keep all this information closer this year and did not release it until real, real late?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, it was really real late. Only our efforts here in Britain, just a handful of
these
us journalists,
and
to expose it.
Real late, huh?
Yeah, it was only a handful of us journalists here in Britain that actually found the meeting space. Very little, have heard very little from InfoWars, etc., on it this year. I was hoping that they would have the resources to, you know, put a couple of phone calls in to get it confirmed, but it didn't happen. Anyway, so yeah, it's going to be an interesting meeting. I'm sure we'll be looking at live streams and pictures. But of course, the Chantilly meetings aren't really like the European ones, most of them. Anyway, where you can actually get quite close to the Bilderbergers, even have a chat with them. That won't be happening, I don't imagine, at Chantilly.
Is Charlie Skelton going to come over this year?
He's there right now. He's there. Yeah,
he's
there in Washington. Okay. It's just outside Washington, D.C., isn't it? It's just
okay. I'd love to get you and him, and maybe me and you and Ole Domegar or something all together Saturday sometime. It'd be fun, I think.
Yeah, I can certainly have a go at doing that, George. I think, yes, Charlie will be reporting for the Guardian USA. He's told me that the British Guardian weren't interested. And, of course, this is one of the aspects of them trying to take over the media, control information. You know, this is it, the war on information. This is the new term that they're going to be coming out with over the next few months. And the war on information, they are waging it. They're waging it on people via organs like The Guardian. They're trying to make sure that the reporting on the Bilderberg ceases, because they don't want anyone looking at them, and they want to just control the agenda. And they are used to, they're very, very rich people. They're used to anybody that says something they don't like, then they just rub them out by one means or another, whether that be, you know, sort of people like Princess Diana talking out about landmines and then finding herself in a nasty car accident, or else it's to do with you know, making sure they're buying up shares in big media corporations and you know, closing them down effectively, or taking them over, in putting in place the editors that you know, basically buy into their whole Darwinian money-based view of the world. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens in the next few years. And I hope that I'll be able to go to the Bilderberg meeting next year, wherever that happens to be. But it's always, you've got to be on the case all the time, I think, trying to make sure, you know, hunt them down and find out where you are. You can't expect someone else to do it for you.
Well, I tell you, it's quite a group, isn't it, huh?
It certainly is, George. Anyway, listen, I've got to fly now, but I hope that's given you something that will help enlighten your listeners as to what will be happening.
And let's get together Saturday if you can. We'll get back together then, okay?
Let's do that, George, definitely.
Okay.
Take care. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Tony.
Bye.
Bye-bye.